It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Bregman, he's been great all night, and it's fitting that he is the one to secure a Game 1 win for the Houston Astros. A little James Harden to boot, a Euro step, and an exclamation point on a victory for the Astros, a 7-2 road win.
There's a lot of hardware down there, you know, Cy Youngs and MVPs and All-Star games and all that stuff, but there's not too many World Series rings down there. I know they're hungry for one, and you know they have a shot right now.
There's a drive into left field. That one going to stay fair. Pierce is watching, and this one is fair and gone. Bradley Jr., a high fly ball to right. Reddick is at the wall. Can only watch a grand slam. Jackie Bradley Jr., a knockout punch here in the eighth.
He worked in his craft. He found a few things that he really liked about his swing. Now he understands who he is as a hitter.
How about 9 2-out RBIs in his last 3 games? And the Red Sox are in the lead.
No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right.
Browns will be off with a crack in the bat with 2 outs.
You and I must fight for.
Deep in the left field, and J.D. Martinez with a home run. Austin strikes first. Red Sox 1-0.
Everyone with hands on. That's what it was going to take in order to beat a great team like Houston.
Yeah, so now in the air, left field. That is hit well. Got some carry to it. That's going to fly. And this one is gone. Rafael Devers, a three-run blast. It is 4-0 Boston.
Bradley Jr., and he is your ALCS MVP.
Some of the best fans in the world. To be bringing the World Series opportunity back to them and American League Championship back to Boston, I'm sure they're going nuts right now back home.
Check it, brought the soul back to the home team. Motown, why can't you see my team is supreme? Diana, welcome to the solar system where the force is you.
985 Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. 617-779-0985. Peter, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm just driving my kids to school here this morning. Totally psyched about the win. Just a couple of points. John, I agree with you. You know, I was texting with my buddy at the end of the game there, and we were going, oh, God, here comes Kimbrel. And, you know, I probably would have kept Eovaldi in, but, you know, it was great to see Kimbrel get in there and get the job done. And you know, for David Price, the guy was overdue, and it was great to see him go deep. and really shut that team down. And Jackie Bradley Jr. winning the MVP, I mean, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And my son Benji's got an autographed picture from Red Sox camp this year, and so we're pretty psyched about that.
He got an autographed – wait, I know if you're going Sarge, hang on 1 second. But he got Jackie Bradley Jr. from Red Sox camp. My kid got screwed. He got Brock Holt, and then he got, like, some jabroni middle reliever.
Oh, really?
It was just luck of the draw, I guess. They went to Fenway. He came in and said some words, and he got an autograph.
Same with my kids, but they had some idiot reliever come in.
That is so funny. Yes, we're just lucky. But one question that I had, and this is, you know, these games go so late, and I know you guys have been talking about it on the radio a little bit, but I mean, what are the chances that the networks can move these games to, like, freaking 6 p.m.?
Okay, let's address two things here, first of all. Are you going to go Sarge on us or not, first of all?
Well, I'll take my answers offline. I'll hang up and let you guys talk.
Oh, he didn't go Sarge on us.
Well, now it's all confusing. now I don't know what. Right. Now it's become detrimental to the show.
Let's address two things. First of all, he was talking about Craig Kimbrell, and I know you guys were discussing whether you'd use him or not, but this is from the Eagle Tribune, Chris Mason, who covers the team. I think we might have had him on before, but he was...
What's the Eagle Tribune?
It's like...
Lawrence, north of the city.
Yeah, it's north of the city, but, I mean, it's...
He's out in Houston?
Yeah,
apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
they took a Greyhound there?
Possibly, he could be.
He went a Dolphin on us, yes.
All right, so he wrote an article called Alex Cora Insinuates Craig Kimbrell is Tipping His Breaking Ball. He says, Craig Kimbrell hasn't commanded his fastball in October. That's the most obvious problem for the Sox closer right now. When asked about what he's been missing after a white-knuckled six-out save in Game 4, Kimbrell was blunt. He said, the plate. But behind the scenes, the Red Sox think there's another problem. Hitters know when Kimbrell's curveball is coming. Quote, there has to be something going on because there's a lot of takes, Alex Cora said. Quality ones, too. It's something that Cora mentioned in the first round against the Yankees, and the trend has continued in the ALCS. Quote, if you take a look at it, he had Gary Sanchez 0-2, and all of a sudden, Sanchez started taking good breaking balls, Cora said last round. That was impressive, or interesting, to say the least. That Cora mentioned it two rounds in a row points to pitch tipping, not sign stealing. Different opponents are seeing the same thing.
Why wouldn't I throw it, swing at a breaking ball? If a guy throws 100 miles an hour, why would I not swing at a breaking ball? If there were good takes, I mean, why would I... That would be... advantageous to me, wouldn't it? I mean,
if you see a pitch headed towards the outside corner and you know it's a breaking ball, you let it go because it's going to be outside.
I understand that, but I mean, they're saying good takes. So I'm immediately not going to swing if I know it's a breaking ball?
Maybe, certain situations where if you didn't know it was a breaking ball, maybe you'd fish for that pitch away. And if you knew it was a breaking ball, you leave it alone.
I don't know. It seems that's all timing. That if I know it's a breaking ball, that it's advantageous to me to swing.
So Cora finishes. He says, hopefully our video system is good and we can find out what's going on and we can fix it. Although there's no fastball command, the quality of the breaking balls are good and they're not offering. Either they have a good game plan or it's paranoia on my end. The Sox manager has earned a well-earned reputation for being savvy when it comes to picking up pitch tipping, so it's hard to imagine it's just paranoia on his part. He said Kimbrell was the best reliever in baseball a year ago, but has been one of the shakiest arms in Boston's bullpen this season. He said, he's been one of the best in the game. We're not going to turn our back on him, as we saw last night. He said, it's not that I owe it to him. It's because we're going to put guys in situations to be successful. So you wonder whether or not they possibly figured it out, what his tipping was, and maybe that's why he was somewhat successful last night.
Yeah. All right, John, go ahead.
Hey, guys, hey.
Hey.
I just want to say that David Price, I think, is vindicated. He needed that. He got the monkey off his back. You could even say that he exercised demons. I feel like all we need now is for Sarge to get laid, and, you know, we're good to go.
Okay, all right.
Uh-huh.
That was a 50% Sarge. Stop doing that, people. Stop.
John, go ahead.
Gentlemen, good morning. I just want to tell you guys that I love your show. You guys on my drive into work make me you change my whole complexion of my day sometimes. Wallach, you're a bird brain, and I'm a school teacher, And I, from now on, always and tell a kid if he's acting annoying, stop being Sarge.
Okay, all right, now that was a good one. That was okay, but stop doing it, please.
All right, Bert Breer from MMQB is in studio as we shift to a little bit of the NFL. We will talk to him in just a moment. It's tailgating season, and Salvador has incredible deals on Chevy, Ram, and pre-owned trucks just off Route 2 in Gardner.
That's my place.
Gardner?
That's Salvador Trucks, yep.
Over there in Gardner?
Over there in Gardner off Route 2, yep. You just pass right by the Great Wolf Lodge, and it's about 5 miles over there on your left after you get off the highway.
Yeah, Rich has got a second home in Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
Just off Route 2 in Gardner and at salvadortrucks.com. Salvador's got your truck.
Good people. Real quick, before we get to Bert, I just want to quickly... somebody sent me a picture of a sporting goods store that opened at 6 a.m. for people to get their AL Champions shirts. And I just want to, once again, I've done this before, but I want to issue a letter of restraint to everybody out there. Because if the Red Sox win, get a World Series shirt. If they lose... It's like a wearable participation trophy. Either way, it's useless in 2 weeks. Why anyone buys any kind of conference champion shirt for any sport, I've always found utterly ridiculous. It ends up being used as a rag for something because it's isn't it embarrassing if they end up losing? Like the Patriots AFC champion shirt, like at a year that they lost the Super Bowl, who's going to wear that?
Yeah, it's not as cool as walking around with like the Super Bowl shirt on. Like where you're like,
but at least that's like a championship
shirt.
You put
your thumbs in you put your thumbs under your armpits and you go, yeah, we're champs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you want from me? it's Red Sox won the World Series, and right here I got the World Series trophy that says Red Sox.
If the Detroit Lions won the Super Bowl, would you buy shirt
without
or hat?
A doubt? Without a doubt, you would.
Oh yeah, I'd wear it everywhere.
You wouldn't buy your kid like a shirt that had that on it?
My kid's 8 and 10. Yeah, probably. I don't know. I'm 43. I'm not running around with a. Yeah, check it out. Lions won the Super Bowl.
I'm gonna have to, I like the team.
I'm
going to have to buy my kids like Red Sox stuff now, right?
They're going to be way into it. By the time your kids are probably of the age of wanting shirts, it'll probably be Revolution stuff. Because, I mean, it's like soccer's just taking over.
It's going to be eSports.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be the Overwatch League.
Soccer's always about to break. It's been that way for 20 years.
Yeah, it was a sport of the future in 1994.
Exactly. Participation is way up. It doesn't matter.
The only reason it hasn't broken here as big as it is because they don't have... Dude, in like Atlanta, they're selling at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Like, it's like 40,000 people
short. There are pockets of fandom that are very loyal, but as far as being a national sport...
It's not a television sport here.
No.
Like that, the main reason why is because the best league isn't here. That's why.
Well, the talent that plays in the MLS is inferior to anywhere else.
They're big on Twitch.
No, they're not big on Twitch.
No, they're not. The Overwatch League is huge on Twitch.
My friends who played high school soccer, really good, like went on and played college soccer. They don't watch the MLS. They get up on Saturday morning and watch the Premier League and watch the Italian League.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Why would you watch? I mean, it's like us going and watching like the
Paw Sox.
It
would be like watching. Listen, Rich had some guy come out to his soccer practice.
He's the only one who scored last night.
Yes, that's correct.
Rich wanted to look like a hot shot in front of the parents in his league.
And, I asked, and they gave me a player.
You innocently
asked. Quite amazing.
Yep,
I asked. and they said, sure, we'll bring a player out of your practice.
He wasn't expecting it.
I wasn't.
That's why he put it on Twitter to 140,000 people.
Why would anyone ever do that? Honestly.
Hardy called me
when he saw that tweet
and said, wow, this guy just magically showed up.
I'm thinking, how many people in the state of Massachusetts, all right, on the East Coast could have done that and gotten an MLS player to show up?
You're proving my point. I didn't know what was going on. No, I didn't say that. I never said that.
I didn't expect them to do it. I don't know how to coach.
I don't.
Could you get a guy in there? You were doing it to show off. You absolutely were.
To show off?
Yeah. Hey, kids, you love MLS. Here's this big star.
All the kids loved it. I don't care if it was a show off or not. They got a good lesson from the guys from Kellen Rowe.
We have some, like, mystery guy. My kid, my kid's four-year-old soccer. He's going to be four in a couple weeks. At his soccer practices, there are a couple guys, like, is it Fuentes? How do you pronounce it? Like, the Italian, that big club in Italy.
I don't know.
Juventus or something like that.
Juventus. Yes.
Juventus. So, like, there are a couple guys who like kind of look like they're built like professional soccer players who I haven't asked yet, but they're wearing like the official Fuentes like warm-ups. Like, so it's like, I don't know if there's something going on there. Like, one of the parents maybe pulled a Rich there or something. Yeah.
They flew him in from Italy, is what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe.
That's likely.
Maybe.
Or perhaps they like fans of the team.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably closer to the truth.
Yeah, that was kind of
That'd be a hard-on move, though, wouldn't it, to show up at, like, four-year-old soccer practice with...
Some random place. I'm not even saying that.
Like, I'm saying, like, if you're just a fan of the team... Like to be showing up.
To
run a youth soccer situation.
See, I like soccer. I like soccer.
Not only just wearing like the official warm ups, like just randomly wearing it to like every single practice.
That would be extremely strange. Yep. Yes. Yeah. Did you have to sit and suffer through that game last night? By the way, as a yes. employee of, of for your gig.
Yeah, it wasn't not like it. It was. I mean, at least it was over quick, so I didn't have to pay that close because we knew it was a bad game to begin with. It's amazing how. Like, those two teams 3 years ago were both in the conference championship.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, Arizona played Carolina, Denver played New England, and now, like, they both look hopeless, and oh, my God, how
on a
bad
short
does
week,
Arizona
too.
Look?
My
how
God.
Yeah, what do you think of Rosen so far?
I think it's just victim of the situation around him. I mean, you know what I think he is right now? He's Jared Goff in 2016.
Okay. Oh, just bad coach.
Yeah, well, it's impossible to get a read on him right now. Because there's so much wrong around him.
Okay. All right. That's understood.
I mean, I think it's like so much of... I mean, look, Tom Brady walks into the situation in 2001, like, Bill did a masterful job of controlling everything around him and making sure they weren't asking too much of him, and they had a really good defense that was opportunistic and setting up the offense in a lot of ways. Like, it was great for Tom's development to be here. Not every quarterback lands in a great situation. In fact, a lot of the guys who are drafted highest wind up in the worst situations because they're going to bad teams.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, like, I think Rosen, the big thing you take from him is, like, it didn't look like Arizona had anything working last night.
Well, you're speaking of bad coaching in bad organizations. What's the deal with Gruden? And how trapped is
Oakland? Are you enjoying the 2018 Raiders?
I love it. I love this guy knowing that he goes up there. Yeah. I honestly don't think he cares. The guy knows he's locked in for 10 years, $10 million a year. Yeah. He's saying anything he wants to say. He's crapping on his own players. Here, I kind of find it funny. As we were saying, Nero is playing his fiddle, his Rome burns.
I want to pull this up for you guys so I don't mess it up because... So I went to train. I was at their training camp, and I got like a half hour with him. And so, you know, we just talked about everything, about like how some people see him as being outdated and all that different stuff. And he's great. And so we started talking about the roster and where they are, just kind of like how close he thinks they are and everything else. And he just started crushing the roster, crushing the draft picks. And I remember I got on a plane that night and was flying to Seattle, and I was like just transcribing, you know, had my headphones on transcribing. And it was like when I was transcribing, it was like worse than like what I remember. Yeah. So
he hated his team that he inherited.
So I'm like, crap. It was so bad that I texted him, and I was like, John, I just want to make sure. Like, I had my recorder out. We were on the record. He's like, oh, yeah. It immediately told me, like, this is a guy who's trying to like make sure that he's making sure that that people know that he didn't inherit a great situation. That people know that he thinks they're a couple years off, and he inherited a general manager. And you guys know, because you guys know who the owner is. You guys know that's not a cash rich organization.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't gonna when they hired Gruden, they weren't going to blow out the general manager, right? So. I think like a big piece of this is he in a certain way is like running the GM off and just and he's putting a lot of his former first round picks up for out on the market. He's he's bad mouthing the roster publicly. I mean, he's doing everything he can. He's like, well, if we can't fire him because the organization doesn't want to eat the contract, then, you know, we'll put you out. I'm going to put you out there, and we'll see how you react.
I just saw what he said. What player was he talking about last week? And he goes, well, you know, he's on his seventh team, and I just wish he would try a little bit harder. Which guy was he talking about when he this past weekend we crapped on another player? He said he's on his seventh team.
It was his own player?
Yeah, it was his own player. A corner. Who's the corner for those guys?
Was it?
He was complaining about playing time.
Well, if he's seventh team, he's probably not worthy of.
No,
really.
He's on his seventh team.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. If he's on his seventh team, it's probably not that big a name. All right, we'll be back with Bert, 617-779-0985. Here are the headlines.
Kutcher and Rich.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich, 617-779-0985. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, Sarge is talentless. He's dumb, but he's not dumb enough to pick the Arizona Cardinals for the pick of the week like Lipschatz. Yeah. Who's your bankroll boy this morning?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I gave him so much crap last night. Like, so his pick yesterday, and I've, like, built up because I've won, like, 4 weeks in a row. I've got, like, $400. And every week I'll let it ride with one of those guys. And I was like, what should I bet on? And he was like, all right, I'm thinking the Cardinals outright. Tonight. It was yesterday. I think they're going to win
it. What
was
the line?
Outright. It was like three, like plus three or something. And even I didn't go with that. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so. And then what? Two pick sixes within like the first like couple
it was
minutes?
Over, it was over 5 minutes.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, that was one of the worst picks.
Now,
possible.
Did you lose the bankroll?
I didn't give it to him. I didn't bet.
You didn't?
No. Because I thought that was so ridiculous. It was also a game I didn't want to watch. Like, right. I didn't want to care about. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. So I haven't told them what I'm going to.
Yeah, I watched a lot of that game. It's probably a good.
Yeah, I just don't care about those two teams.
I always forget that it's on. I mean, Thursday? Even though last night was a Red Sox night, I always forget it was on.
I mean, Thursday Night Football had like a nice run early in the year.
Oh, like four games in a row right. That were amazing.
And then it's been like vintage TNF the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I
mean, we had Odell Beckham fighting an AC unit last week, and you know this week we have Josh Rosen looking awful.
All right, so I know we'd mentioned Gruden and of course Khalil Mack. So what? Khalil Mack has not practiced the last couple of days.
Right.
And I also know that if you take a look at what he's done all the way up to last week's game against Miami, he's been dominant. But then, apparently after he was injured, the Miami game was the first one, which I think he didn't register any kind of pressure on the quarterback.
Right.
He was off. So what are you hearing about him this weekend against the Patriots? And how bad is it right now?
I think he'll give it... I think there's a good chance he gives it a go. That's one of those positions where if you're banged up that way, it can really affect you because so much is based on how explosive you are.
Yeah.
And if you can't get off the same way, then that's going to be a problem. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Khalil Mack get out there and, I mean, maybe play a full load. I just, like, based on the fact that he's not practicing, it's just hard for me to see where. And it looked like it affected him last week, too.
How bad was it last week? Because I only saw the highlights of the Miami Bears game.
I mean, he didn't look great. Now, I will say that the Dolphins did a good job of containing him, and that's as bad as the Bears defense has looked all year long.
Beat by Osweiler.
Right. So, I think, you know, losing Mack, they're still a good defense, but they're not what they have been the first 5 weeks of the season. That defense, like, Khalil Mack was, and people make this mistake, and look, I understand why, because Mack's a great player. Like, Mack was more of a finishing piece for them defensively. They were a really good defense last year with a lot of young players on the verge of becoming great, and Mack put them over the top. But they've still got a lot of good defensive players. Floyd, Akeem Hicks, Roquan Smith, Danny Trevathan, Kyle Fuller,
sure.
Amos, Jackson at safety. Like, that's a good defense to begin with. I wouldn't be surprised if Mack, if he does play, is still very limited this week because the position he plays, that sort of injury is going to affect him.
All right.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's going to be interesting, too, because now all of a sudden the Patriots have a running game. I mean, one that they leaned on last week with Sony Michel.
And that can help. That can really help against a defense like that where, I mean, look, Hicks is, and this is like letting go of him starting to kind of like, it's like crystallized to me the first two or three weeks of the season. Like, that was an underrated mistake by the Patriots. Like, that's not one we talk about much. He was a really good player for them the 3-4 months they had him. And that, like, letting him go, like, was one move where you look at it and you say, that may have been a sneaky mistake.
Was it a price tag or was it just a mistake?
It was price tag, yeah. But, I mean, you know, and I understand, like, you know, you start to look where he fits in your salary structure and it's like, well, we have to give this guy a raise or that guy a raise if we paid him.
Yeah.
But he's been a really good player for them, and he's gotten even better because he's playing next to Mack. That's where Mack's, beyond just being great himself, Mack's made an impact on other guys in that, like, Hicks and Floyd and the other guys up front are seeing one-on-ones more often.
So with Sony Michel, how much of that is like him getting better every week, it seems like? How much is it? Because and he's had a lot of help with the offensive line.
He's getting really, like looks more comfortable.
Okay, so you think a lot of it is him, and it's not even as much. Because, I mean, the first couple weeks where he had success, well, look, I mean, the O-line was fantastic.
Yeah, and I think part of it, Rich, is like our expectations are way up here for rookie running backs, right? And it's one of those positions where guys contribute right away. Like, look at Todd Gurley's rookie year. Look at Ezekiel Elliott's rookie year. Look at Leonard Fournette's rookie year. General, and we've been conditioned to think that's, and rightfully so, like that's the position where you're leaning on instincts the most. It's like more God-given ability than anything else. And it, like, watching how slow he looked against Detroit, it just sort of hit me. Like, looked like he was like swimming mentally a little bit. And then you look at the guys who've come in here. I mean, James White didn't do much when he was young. Shane Vereen didn't do much when he was young. Mm-hmm. Maybe they asked a little bit more of the running backs, and maybe they had to kind of scale back on Sony a little bit, where it's like, we're just going to ask you to do a few things, and we're going to build on that. I think the mistake early on may have been they were asking a little bit too much of him. You scale back on him a little bit, and now he's starting to play fast, and you see why he was a first-round pick in the first place.
Let me ask one quick question about his pass-catching ability, because it's obvious when he's in the ball game, they're going to run the football. You have not seen many opportunities.
He can catch the ball.
Well, that's the thing. I watched the national championship game like everyone else, but I did not see the bulk of his work during his last season.
Well, I mean, the hope is, I mean, look, the new prototype for a running back in the NFL is like a 220, 230-pound guy who can catch the ball, who can play on all three downs. I mean, that's what Zeke was coming out of Ohio State. That's what Gurley's become as a pro. He wasn't really that at Georgia, but he's become that as a pro. That's what, like, Joe Mixon is. That's what Le'Veon Bell is. And I think that the Patriots envision this guy as one of those. And I think that there's a parallel with Sony and Zeke Elliott. He's not as talented as Zeke Elliott. But Zeke didn't catch the ball a lot in college. But the coaches there would constantly say about him, you should see what he can do. You know, they had like offensively, Georgia last year, Ohio State in 2014 and 15, they had so much talent everywhere that it's like, we're not throwing it to him a lot, but I'm telling you, you can catch the ball. And Sony was one of those where it's like the ability to catch the ball has always been there. And so it'll be interesting to see when the Patriots go to that, because they would not draft a running back in the first round. I'm telling you right now, they would not draft a running back in the first round who cannot contribute in the passing game. No chance that would have happened. So you certainly know they saw that there, and it'll be interesting to see when they start to go to it.
Do you think that we had Will Brinson on the other day, and he had an interesting theory about the defense of the Patriots and why the lack of making any big moves and spending big money and bolstering it up. And he was saying that he thought that maybe it's because it's been so tough to be a defensive player, especially on the quarterback nowadays.
Oh, by the way, that was my point to Will.
Oh, was it yours to Will?
Yes.
Well, it was an excellent point.
I did
not mean to give Will Brinson credit where it was not due.
Don't give Will Brinson my point.
So I work with a genius
who
came up with an amazing idea.
That's right. My point, Bert, is this, is that with the new rules, are we getting to a point where it's not wise to spend excessively on that side of the ball?
I think there are some teams that are approaching it that way now, too.
That's right.
I...
You got that?
It was Fred that thought of that.
Congratulations.
Wait a second. I can't take credit for that?
I'm giving you credit.
No, but you think that was an... I'm being dead serious. That was an a-hole move to say that I thought of it?
No. I'm giving you credit. Okay. I want to make sure get it. I feel like an a-hole for thinking that it was
Will
Brinson.
Well, you should. I mean, it was just... I mean,
I was actually talking to a veteran head coach during training camp who explained this to me. And he said, you know what Bill does? He says, it's like the whole outliers thing, right? It's like, what is no one else looking for? What can I do to kind of keep the ball moving forward? And it's like, if you look on like the offensive side of the ball, we always see like the offensive coaches, like Sean McVay is great at this. It's like they're never standing still because they know football is a cat and mouse game. So they keep it moving forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Andy Reid's great. Like Andy Reid, his offense now, doesn't resemble what he was running in Philadelphia.
Sure.
Not even close. Like, and that's a credit to Andy Reid. Bill's the same on the defensive side of the ball. And what this coach explained to me is like every two or three years, Bill sort of turns over what they are on defense. And so what you saw the last two or three years when they were trading for guys that no one wanted, like guys like Kyle Van Noy, guys like Shea McClellan, you know what he was doing was he was getting players who were sort of position ambiguous.
Yeah.
And so this coach's point was he spent in the secondary, and then with his front seven, he got a whole bunch of guys who just looked the same, right? Like a lot of guys who looked the same. So what he could do up front then was, you don't know if this guy's a linebacker or a defensive end. You don't know if this guy's in coverage or rushing. You don't know. And so I'm going to load up on guys in the secondary. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to bring guys up front where that guy might not be the best player, but you don't know what that guy is right now. And so like it was interesting because it was like they've sort of turned over from – and his point was every 2 or 3 years you see Bill doing a little – you do see him doing something else. And that's what it had been the last couple of years. And I think one of the reasons they did that was they had a couple of players in Hightower and Collins that were that, like that were guys who could do both. So it's like, let's load up on guys like that so we can sort of get the best out of our best players in the defensive front seven.
All right. It's Feed the Fan Friday presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Be listening after the break. For this morning, not, you know, in the future, be listening after the break this morning for your chance to score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom, stopandshop.com.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
.985 The Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster. By the way, Jared Carabas on with us. I'm sure having a very good morning. He's on at 9 o'clock to talk about the Red Sox. And the guy from Impractical Jokers will be at 9:20, which, once again, they are playing the TD Garden, which is amazing to me. So, awesome.
Yeah.
I'm tossing it to you, Fred.
Oh. I was kind of wondering myself what was going on there.
Very nice tease. All right, Bert. So
it's from the Randy Lane School of Radio.
That's right. Yeah.
I want people to know that we got Red Sox stuff coming up, obviously.
Sure. It's going
to
be technicians over here.
Mm-hmm. Well done.
Pretty much going to be Red Sox after this. All right, what about the quarterback over there, Trubisky? He seems to be having a little bit more success than most people, I believe.
Well, I don't know. Like, I'd be a little worried about where he's at right now if I'm in Chicago. Like, I just, based on what I'm hearing from other teams who've gone against him, people who've evaluated him, one of the things that he did best in college was he was able to go from number one to number two to number three to number four, which sounds simple, right? Like, he's a progression-read quarterback, but a lot of kids coming out of college can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so that was why he went second overall. That's why he went in front of Patrick Mahomes. That's why he went in front of Deshaun Watson. And I was talking to, you know, a guy who really, really liked Trubisky coming out a few weeks ago, and he said to me, I think I missed on him. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I think I missed. I think I had it wrong. It's like, I'm watching the tape. Like, he's one read and run now. And so that what that tells you is, like, he just doesn't have confidence in everything around him. Now, part of it might be that he's playing for a new coach in a new system, and he needs time to learn and assimilate and all of that. But the fact that we're seeing those things in year two isn't great.
He did have a 6-touchdown game, though.
But that, did you watch that game?
Yes, I did.
Who were they playing?
There were guys, Tampa's defense was so bad. I mean, that was guys running free all over the place. And so all I'm saying, Wallach, he's got a ways to go. There is potential that is going to, in 5 years, look like a colossal mistake.
Well, sure. I mean, they picked him before Mahomes, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And Watson.
Watson, I think, it's funny.
Watson's been up and down this year.
Well, I think he's injured.
I'm just going to say, is the knee back all the way or not?
It's the ribs.
He's
taking a lot of hits. I mean, he's... And look, I don't think we can get a real read on Watson until we see him with a competent offensive line in front of him, which he doesn't have right now.
This is Bill O'Brien's last year, wouldn't you say?
No.
No?
No, because they reset everything. They just hired, they just gave him his general manager, Brian Gain. They just went through all this drama with him and the GM. They gave both those guys contracts through 2022. And, I mean, the whole thing with O'Brien was we haven't had a chance to get the roster right.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got huge issues on the offensive line and at corner. And those are really hard to cover up. Like, if you've got problems in those two areas, it's really, really hard to make that, to put lipstick on a pig. On that pig. There you go. Bad analogy.
Yeah. All right. So why are the Patriots only favored by 3 this weekend?
Because the Bears play good defense, because it's on the road, because who knows what can happen. They're coming off an emotional game on Sunday night, because that's where Vegas thinks the money's going. I think if Mac isn't right.
It doesn't seem like he is.
And I don't think he will be. If Mac isn't right on Sunday, I think there's a good chance the Patriots wind up winning by double digits.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought that going into it, to the fact that he hasn't practiced in 2 days. I think it's like two in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. How can you explain Adrian Waddle handling Mac last year when the Patriots played Oakland in Mexico City? Well, that just seems to be the anomaly here.
Well, part of it's getting the ball out. And Oakland's secondary was god-awful last year. I mean, they were really, really bad on the back end. And what are the Patriots going to do in a situation like that? We're going to get the ball out quick. We're going to game it up. They have Khalil Mack. Like, you know, one of the things you're going to be cognizant of is that you got to be playing with the clock out there. So that's a piece of it. I think Waddle did a decent job in that game. Mack did get to him at least once, maybe twice.
Once that I can think of.
Yeah, I think he sacked him once, hit him another time. So he wasn't completely silent.
I'm just talking about the first half. Second half, you can just like toss out because the Patriots are way up. But in the first half, it looked like Waddle did a decent job.
I mean, I will say this about Mac. Mac's been dominant in spots. He's not, it's not every week. Like, it's not, like, he has a tendency, like, there have been certain spots where he's, and this is, most pass rushers are this way, but this isn't J.J. Watt. Like, J.J. Watt, it would be like either you're double and triple teaming him, or he's blowing the game up. Like, there was a period of time where, like 3 or 4 years, where it was like, either you're taking care of him in a really major way, or he's just going to completely take over. That's, Mac flashes like that, but Mac has also had, like, you know, little periods where he hasn't been quite at that level. And so I think that's what separates Watt and Mac right now, is consistency.
All right. It's Feed the Fan Fridays, presented by Stop and Shop, the official supermarket of the New England Patriots. Caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985 will score a $100 Stop and Shop gift card to feed their fandom, stopandshop.com. How long do you think it takes for yogurt to go bad?
I don't know.
Sitting out? Not in the refrigerator?
In the fridge?
No.
I would say
3 hours?
Five, 6 hours, actually.
Okay, then I'm all right.
Okay.
All right.
is there some yogurt sitting on your counter at home?
No, just here. And then my stomach started bothering me, and I was wondering if it was because of the yogurt.
Oh, yeah, you're all right. You're okay.
Bert Breer from MMQB, thank you so much for the time. We'll get back to Red Sox, no commercials, just the headlines.